This is KCBX, Central Coast Public Radio, here on NPR One.
My name is Valerie Corcoran, and we're here at the lovely Lava Lava Beach Club.
And this is on the Kohala Coast?
This is on the Kohala Coast, and right now we're just enjoying the most beautiful view. It's just the water is so calm today, not too breezy.
I love it. You are involved and have been for quite a while with the Kona Coffee Festival?
Yes, I have.
And you're the ruler of it, aren't you?
Yes.
You're the president?
I am the president of the Kona Coffee Cultural Festival, the first woman president.
And this festival, I just learned today, goes back as approaching 50th anniversary.
Yes, it is. You know, in our discussion at lunch, we did talk about, you know, a group of people getting together to put together something that happens during a lull.
A slow tourism period, yeah. Yes. But kind of a no-brainer to come up with Kona Coffee as the anchor?
Many of those people in that group were coffee farmers. Or in one case, his family owned a large building company, and so they provided all the materials for all the coffee farms.
So you, as a young girl, you grew up working on a coffee plantation, right?
Yes, I did. We had a small coffee farm. And in those days, you know, in the dark ages, coffee at that time, they believed in tall trees. And so as a child, the big thing was to go on the ladder. So you had ladders in those days. And going up on the ladder to pick the coffee, that was the most fun thing to do. And in those days, of course, my father made us, our coffee baskets were made out of the 5-gallon can.
A tin.
And so my mother would go, I don't hear anything, because blink, blink, you know, you can hear it, blink, blink.
So it was tied with a string around your neck,
yes,
right?
Yes, it was.
So your hands would be free.
Yes. And then
so you could get busted if you weren't producing.
I totally busted. My mom had good ears. And because I was the oldest, my responsibility in those days, my dad did process our coffee. And they're called hoshidanas, in which you dry your coffee. So it's up, you know, you got to run up the stairs. And they had a movable roof, so I would have to roll it back. And so that was I loved that.
So then they were sun-dried, right?
They were. Mm-hmm. Yes, we were sun-dried. And, you know, like I said, those were the days for children. You know, my family did not rely on the income from coffee. So I have a different story compared to other friends that had to get up early in the morning and pick coffee before they went to school. And they couldn't play sports because they had to go home right away after school to pick coffee. So what is unique about Kona is that they changed the summer vacation.
Wow, based around
the coffee picking.
Interesting.
Is that not interesting?
Yeah. So how did it shift?
So it shifted from instead of vacation being, you know, June, July, August, vacation for us started August, September, November. I went back to school in December.
And this was in the 1950s?
In the 50s, yes.
So the coffee growing tradition as a agricultural crop on the Big Island goes back, if I remember correctly, 120, 130 years?
Yes, it does.
And was it primarily the Japanese who started it?
Yes. You know, many of them came over to be plantation workers. Mm-hmm. And it was really a hard life there. And so somehow they migrated to Kona, and there were properties available for them to lease. And so they started their farms there. You know, it's amazing. The towns developed around the coffee plantations, you know, like Holualoa, down in Captain Cook, in Honaunau. They were you know, they were like made.
Like this company store would be there.
Yes. Yeah. The other thing is, it's so amazing because in those days, you know, you don't have automobiles. Mm-hmm. So they started a chain of little restaurants and inns, and they were located so that you can do, it was a day trip to go by horse.
To each stop. Interesting. What remains of that early incarnation today? Any of the old businesses?
They still have some. Teishima Restaurant is one of them. They have, it's called the Kona Hotel in Hualalua. Manago Hotel is a very famous hotel now, you know, because of their food. But those were
started.
Those were the beginning. I mean, it started in Kau. There is one in Kau. And I can't remember all of the inns, but basically that was one of the reasons why they had those inns.
Interesting. So as we all know, Kona Coffee has a worldwide reputation and a ring as an extraordinarily exceptional coffee. Was that by accident? Was that always so? How did it evolve to become so exceptional?
It actually probably evolved by marketing. Some people got into marketing, and Kona Coffee was always a decent coffee, okay? And what happened is that they had a co-op. That co-op worked really hard. They made it so that, you know, they kind of had a general store also in that sense where people could charge until, you know, they got paid. But what happened is that the buyers, they ended up having the monopoly on Kona Coffee, and it always, on the world market, it depended on what they could sell the coffee for. So Kona Coffee took a huge dip in '70s. It took a big, and where
the,
people...
The price that
the
it would come in.
The price dropped off. You don't want me to name the company. Okay. But it dropped so bad, people were giving up on coffee. In the 80s, so I might be wrong, but I'm saying in the 80s, it started to pick up, and then they didn't have that one company buying coffee anymore. They had other people, but again, so here are the local families are still doing coffee.
But in that downturn, your family got out of coffee growing, right?
Actually, my family got out of it in the 60s, and, you know, our small place, like I told you before, they ended up renting it to a tomato farmer. But Kona Coffee ended up taking it, but in the 80s, I'm almost sure it's in the 80s and 90s, big resurgence. It became people, the marketing, it became marketing. And then when it became a gourmet, they got the rating of a gourmet coffee, we started having lots of people, retired people from the mainland coming, scientists. So they're coming and they're developing an even higher quality coffee. We have a local family being a big processor for us. You know, we've had so many ups and downs, but I think the resurgence of Kona Coffee came when we got that gourmet rating. And now we have to keep that quality up. That's become something that, you know, you've got 700 farmers.
You said you have 700 growers just in the Kona growing area.
Yes, and we do have a district that they have to be within that district to have Kona Coffee.
So outside of the district, you have other Big Island coffee growers too.
Called Kau Coffee, Honoka. They have some in Hilo. You know, that's why, you know, we have many different islands trying to, you know, come off of the Kona Coffee, like Maui. You know, Oahu has them. Of course, you have Kauai Coffee. You know, so we have all these different, because everybody has a different way of processing. This is the other thing about Kona Coffee. Hand-picked.
100% to qualify.
Well, it's just that's the only way Kona Coffee can be produced is hand-picked. On Kauai, they have machines. Maui has machines, you know, but in Kona, it's all about the hand pick.
Interesting. Okay, so since Kona Coffee survived the downturn and is now thriving, 50 years ago, you guys decided to celebrate the coffee with a festival. So talk to us about that. The Kona Coffee Festival, every year you've been putting it on approaching 50 years. So how did it start and what's the point of it?
The point of it was to culturally tie in Kona Coffee to also promote tourism. Mm-hmm. You know, it's no longer in Kona, but the Kyoho Beach Hotel was one of the first hotels that we had many of our events there. And then what happened is that even though November is a heavy picking time, mm-hmm. it is so amazing to see the community come out, because it's basically was a button that was, what, a dollar? Or was it 50 cents? Our button and T-shirts mm-hmm. funded the festival. And then later, in the later years, we got the Department of Ag. We got money from them. And then when I started in the 90s, the county of Hawaii gave us money towards the festival. But that is what we were. We operated on a shoestring mm-hmm. and prayed people would buy our T-shirts.
Interesting. But today it's evolved, and it's a 10-day festival, 2019 in November?
Yes. It started being a 10-day event, and I'm not sure how many years, you know, because once we got our major sponsor is Hawaii Tourism Authority. And we are very fortunate to have a company from Japan who has supported the industry, Ueshima Coffee Company from Japan, Kobe, Japan. What they provide for us, not only in donations, we have a Miss Kona Coffee, we have a pageant, and the Miss Kona Coffee goes to Japan to promote coffee. And it is such a great experience mm-hmm. to do that. I was fortunate to be a chaperone on one of those, and it's really a great.
Since you have some underwriting funding from a Japanese-based company, it would follow, I would think, that it would attract indirectly Japanese tourists, right?
We have been very blessed with that. Mr. Ueshima does come to the festival almost every year. And he always brings an entourage with him. Actually, last year is very interesting because they had a bunch of Korean people that he brought. Because, okay, so to speak about Ueshima Coffee, he is just the sweetest man. And actually, you know, in Japanese culture, men, you know, to speak to them is a little different than speaking to local Japanese men. But when I first met him, and we're talking about Kona Coffee, and he goes, you know, Kona Coffee, only this much Ueshima. Ueshima, worldwide. He said worldwide. And, you know, and so 2 years ago, he was back, and as the new president, took him to dinner, and he said, because I was talking to him about his Jamaican plantation. You know, Blue Mountain is big in the coffee world.
I love Blue Mountain.
So I asked him, I said, so how is Jamaica? You know, your Blue Mountain, that is so wonderful. He goes, not so good. He said, Kona Coffee.
Wow. That's incredible.
It was incredible when he said that to me, that Kona Coffee is up there now. And I was so thankful. And he just, you know, they have huge plantations, you know, all over the world.
Interesting.
He's a very, as I said before, he's very interesting, and he understands and speaks more English now.
Back to the festival itself. Okay. Coming up 2019, this year is the 1st through the 10th of November?
Yes.
So it's 10 days of festive activities.
And it starts off with our event called the Coffee and Art Stroll in Holoaloa. It's become a very great opener for the festival. You know, with social media, it is amazing. Lots of young people. First of all, coffee has become so big. And you've got now a following of young people. What are they calling them? Not millennials. But they have a...
Well, you got the X Gen and then the Ys. And...
Yeah. So they have these people coming now. And the stroll, not only is the art fabulous, they have 30 coffee farmers that you can taste their coffee, of course, for purchase. And if you've, you know, Hulualoa is a quaint little town. And to have that event, it's amazing to get all the different people. And of course, I forgot the Lantern Parade. Sorry, we open up with the Lantern Parade, which is culturally... This is part of the festival. We're not about Kona Coffee. We're about the culture behind Kona Coffee. And so we have the Lantern Parade. We go through Kailua Town and Ali'i Drive from the pier to Halehalawai. And that's what, 3 blocks? It's a short, not that short, but we have different cultures. We have the Filipinos. We have school groups. We have huge halals. Last year we had this huge halal, which tied into the Ganemono 150 years that the Japanese, and here's our story, King Kalakaua contracted with the Meiji Emperor to bring contract workers over. And last year we had one of those descendants who was, she and her sister were the Grand Marshals. Oh. So it's just interesting, again, to bring the culture with...
the history with the and history. The legacy.
Yes.
That's so cool.
So that's what the Lantern Parade is all about. You know, and
their actual lanterns?
Yes. Yes. And we had some wonderful painted. And so what we do also is that when we end up at the Halehalawai, which is just a pavilion, then we brought the... taiko drummers, and then we have a bon dance. And last year, I was blown away with how many people, because we always are telling them, follow us to the Halehalawai. We had so many people there. I mean, we don't always get that crowd, but we had this huge crowd, and to have people learning to do bon dance.
Oh, I love it.
And then again, you know, we have the stroll. Then on that night, we have our pageant. Then after the pageant, the next day we have our recipe contest. And every year, you know, we have this recipe contest. They're sponsored by KTA, and they just celebrated their 100 years here in Hawaii. Uh-huh.
And KTA is?
It's a grocery store, okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And last year, for the first time, the Historical Society has a farm day every year.
At their historic farm where you go to. Yeah, that's cool. I love going there.
Oh, did you go there?
Yeah.
Oh, isn't it? So in the past, they have it in October. Last year, they said, you know, we should have it during the festival. And so they had it. And, of course, it was a little hard because we have a recipe contest. And then we have this.
Recipes that all have coffee in them?
Yes. And what's unique about it is that... it is part of the curriculum for the culinary school here. And so we have all the students preparing food with coffee.
I see a Kona Coffee Festival cookbook. Yeah.
We do have a cookbook. It was done for our 25th anniversary.
So now it's time to do another one. Yeah.
Yes, we are really getting geared up for the 50th.
So other highlights during that 10 days.
Other highlights, of course, you have to have cupping. And what we've brought back, it's a new event. We have a barista contest. And I have to tell you, the interest, oh my goodness. The first year, the people were just packed like sardines into this little coffee and bakery.
Way do the baristas come from to compete?
First year we had it, they were just the local baristas. Last year, they came from Oahu. Some of the big coffee companies, Honolulu Coffee Company, the Kona Coffee Stop, Yeah, depot stop.
I can see them coming from Seattle and Portland and San Francisco.
No,
yeah.
It would be wonderful. We had the first year's winner went to a barista contest 2 months ago. I think it was California. And she took Greenwell Farms new premier coffee with her. And she was a finalist. Or was she the runner-up? But she did really well, and she represented Kona. So that was, you know, that's a whole different ball game. Baristas. I mean, I was, because I didn't understand it, I drink black coffee. I mean, it's like.
I don't need any help.
Yeah, I know. And it's, okay, we're making this fancy foam, you know. But it's impressive because it's amazing what they can do. The winner, last year's winner, he had like a peacock. I was like, how did you do that? But I'm just saying, this is, again, age. This is the new thing.
Well, a friend of mine sent me an Instagram picture. I think it was Dubliner, and it had his picture in the phone.
Oh my goodness. See? Yeah. They're so artistic. So I'm just saying, cupping for us is big. It's very, for the farm that wins, within the last few years, 7 years, we've added, it's called the crown division. So when you cup, you only have to have 2 pounds of your green coffee submitted, where the crown, you have to have 1,000 pounds available for purchase, or you have, that's part of it. So of course that breaks it down because it has to be from this season. And to have a coffee farm that can have that much, that's a lot of coffee.
Yeah. Other highlights of the 10-day festival?
Other highlights, more for our cultural side, we have our Ho'olauleʻa. The Ho'olauleʻa is held at another county building, big pavilion, and they specifically, it's cultural. You have your coffee, and then they put on a program. They try to keep it cultural related, but they bring in some very well-known entertainers, and they've brought in a couple of Hoku Award winners, so it's really neat. It used to be a 3-day event, you know, specifically for certain things. But now they put it all in one day, and they have all the Hawaiian crafts. You know, they teach, they're doing poi. They're making poi. They're doing lohala weaving.
Everybody brings their own poi pounders now.
Well, they have a group doing that, and they let you try it. I mean, it is really neat to see them pounding poi. I don't know. Have you done that?
Yes.
You gone to? Yeah. It's such
it library paste.
and you know what? Yes. But if you have fresh poi, you'll never go back to.
That's true.
It is. It's so sweet. It's so good.
Okay, one more highlight of the festival. One of your favorites.
Oh, my goodness. I almost forgot the Donkey Mill. It's an art group has put this together, a bunch of artists. You know, in the early days in Ho'olauleʻa, they had a couple, the Rogers, and they started doing art classes. The art classes grew from just local people who now actually have quite a following. And so when they passed away and that small area that they were using, you know, leased out to someone else, they developed Donkey Mill. And, of course, that was a coffee mill at one time. And now they have, and so their focus is to get young people, students involved, and also to get more interest in art. And, yes, so they do, actually, they do like a 3-week. They start it with the festival, but they continue for 2 more weeks or after the festival. Again, they focus on certain artists. 1 year they did a whole display in Lohala hats. They had like old vintage, and then they had new hats. It was quite a display. they always do different crafts during the week. You know, they have a paper maker, so children can go and make paper. Very interesting. They have artists, you know, working with cardboard. Not my type of art, but they always are unique in what they put together for the community and mostly for children, you know. Last year, they honored Norman Sakata, who is the chairman of the board. He is Mr. Kona Coffee. And those are the kinds of things they do. It's community-based. You know, it's just so amazing. When we think of him, you know, he still keeps going. And he just is, you know, I'm going to be going to another thing this weekend. They're honoring him. He is just the name of the festival.
I love it. Well, I'm looking forward to hopefully I can drop in and attend at least a day or two. That would be so cool.
Oh, it'd be so wonderful to see. Well, you've also, well, you've seen the historical farm day.
Yeah.
So and amazing.
I love going there.
So they're going to be at the end of the festival, okay? You know, the beginning, of course, will be the pageant, the stroll, cupping in the middle of the week so that we can get it broken up.
And from a tourism visitor standpoint, it really is a win-win because it is a slow period of tourism, so you're not going to be inundated with a zillion people at Christmas time or, you know, the winter snowbird people. Yeah, it's kind of, it's a win-win for everybody.
It is. Actually, the snowbirds are just coming in. That's when they come in. And I have been able to do surveys during the festival, and it is always so amazing. Where did you come from, mm-hmm. you know? And how many people were here for the winter, you know? And
conversely, how many locals come? That's cool.
It has been great that the community, again, we're always trying to encourage. We are fortunate that the festival, we like to include school groups. And so, you know, again, the parade always, Lantern Parade always has different school organizations. And then we use the school organizations to help us clean up, set up. And then at some events, you know, they have a booth and they can sell food or drinks.
And as a fundraiser for them.
For their group. And it's just, that's basically our thing, is about the community. You know, that's the new thing to do now, is to try and encourage our graduates to come back and be farmers. I mean, and not so much farmers. They don't have to be farmers, but to come back and use
their skills.
Yeah. I grew up with friends, you know, we graduated in the 60s, and they all got jobs on the mainland. As their parents got older, they actually left these big paying jobs and came back to Kona to farm.
Interesting. So full circle.
It is. Yeah. It's to me, it's just amazing.
Well, Valerie, I could keep you all day. This has been just a delight. Thank you so much for sharing.
Thank you for asking us to share the story of the Kona Coffee Cultural Festival.
All right. So before we go, for further information,
we have a website called the KonaCoffeeFest.com. Mm-hmm. And you can get information on that, on all our events. We even have a travel page. And you can also go to the travel page and make bookings and, you know, make your flight with Alaska Airlines.
They're one of your partners.
Yes, we are very thankful to have them as a partner.
That's so cool. So they do support you big time.
Yes, they have. And my name is Valerie Corcoran. I am the president of the Kona Coffee Cultural Festival, and we would love to see you at our festival in November.
I would love to have some Kona coffee right now.
Well, I hope you'll enjoy it.
And I'm Tom Wilmer, reporting from the Big Island of Hawaii. We'll see you here.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world.
Associate producers include Rebecca Nolan, Newfoundland, Canada, Molly Blaisdell, San Francisco, and Katya Singel, San Luis Obispo, California.
Underwriting support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided in part by the Society of St. Vincent de Paul. People often associate the Society of St. Vincent de Paul with thrift stores. Donations like clothing, your gently used couch, or still serviceable washing machine generate funds to assist the Society in putting food on the table for people in need, or keeping the lights on and families in their homes. To find a St. Vincent de Paul thrift store in your area, visit svdpusa.org.